You're listening to Rosie on the House.
There's that rooster crow. It's Saturday morning in Arizona as we head on around back. It's 8 o'clock. It is our outdoor living hour. And the first Saturday of the month, we bring in Julie Murphy with the Arizona Farm Bureau. Always brings a special guest with her, and we try and time it seasonally. The great thing about, well, not the great thing, one of the great things about Arizona is there's always something harvesting at some point in time somewhere throughout the state with all the different elevations and the climate, and we try and time her guest with whatever's close to being in season right now, so you, the Arizona listener, know when you're shopping locally what you can be selecting that was grown right here locally, and it supports the local farm in your local community. And we are broadcasting live today at the Tucson Home Show at the Tucson Convention Center for the Saba Home Show. If you would like to join the Rosie on the House broadcast early, you can. I believe we have about 20 tickets left to get in an hour early. You would just park in Lot B, south west corner, walk down the ramp. You'll see all the food trucks. Just keep going all the way to the last door, and we've got a little live open broadcast. We've got coffee and bagels here provided by the Tucson Convention Center, and we'll be here broadcasting live through 11 o'clock, and we've got our booth right here for the rest of the weekend. So with that said, this was really a special time for us because our guest is from Cochise County. And I'll let Julie Murphy with the Arizona Farm Bureau introduce her special guest. She's in our flagship station, KTAR in Phoenix. We're broadcasting live down here at KNST out of Tucson. Julie, welcome.
Hi, Romy, and thank you again for having us on. And my special guest today is Ed Curry with Curry Farms, and he's our chili expert and the one that can tell us all about our favorite crop. And if you guys, if our listeners want to listen extendedly to or learn more about it, we also just posted a blog yesterday about Ed Curry. But I'm going to hand it over to Ed so he can tell his story. Ed, why have you guys become so good at developing chilies here in Arizona?
Well, we're kind of like doctors in medicine. We're still practicing. I don't know that we're that good yet.
You look by judging by what's in that bag, man. Did you see that, Roby? Yeah. Holy cow.
I brought some chilies here to show them, man. So you get to see a little bit of what's going on here. Julie, my family started, my mother and father moved to Cochise County in 1952 from Oklahoma. They had experienced some drought trying to raise peanuts and really struggled with that and looked for an irrigated area, and they found Cochise County. 1957, my dad planted his first chili crop, which was virtually a failure due to how hard it is to get a stand and him being a novice. 1958, he produced his first chilies. He was selling them to a canner in the old Douglas Bisbee Airport, Mr. Bob Kenyon. Bob and Shorty Kenyon had a cannery there. And they started selling there, and chili became a very important part of our livelihood. And I knew that as a little boy. At 8 years old, we flew on a plane to Hatch, New Mexico, to the Lytle farm. Jim Lytle and his wife had developed a better seed, had perfected chili a little bit, and finding good seed was very difficult. And I knew at 8 years old, seed was important.
So even then, Hatch, New Mexico was known for their chilies.
Yeah, that was still the epicenter, if you will.
Okay. Rose.
All right. Absolutely. And so from there, at about eighth grade, a man named Phil Villa, who is one of the best pepper geneticists in the world, was the breeder for Ortega out of Oxnard, California, and I started following Phil around and really fell in love with him and the crop. And my dad worked extensively closely with Phil, and then shortly out of high school I joined ranks with Phil, and we started growing seed blocks, and he started teaching me. Always throw in, I'm extremely ADHD. I did not do well sitting in a classroom, but my classroom as a chili field was wonderful. And Phil, in the advent of cell phones, and I could call Phil from Camarillo, California, and literally spend hours on the phone with him in the field, guiding me on how to select, what to do. And it was just a lifelong process. And next to my dad, he had more influence on me than any one man in my life. And we lost Phil 5 years ago, and we continue. But we have a very diverse set of genetics. We have the largest gene pool of capsicum annuums in the world, and we do more research than anybody at any research station, any college, any university, anywhere. And I don't mean that arrogant. That's just kind of what's happened. And so we do. We're blessed. We get to work with Dr. Rod Wing here at the U of A and in the molecular division, and Steve Hansen with the molecular division in New Mexico State.
What y'all looking for in all that molecular study of peppers?
That's a fun question. What are we looking for?
What y'all looking for?
Oh, well, for one thing, you know, the basics. Good question. The basics. Number one, we're looking for high yield for the grower. And what really put us on the map was in the early 90s, the chili industry was growing. And as you guys know, if you get on one plant, you might get some hot chili and you might get some mild. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. In the early days, that's the way it was. The heat consistency was very difficult.
It was nature's box of chocolates. You just never knew what you were going to get.
Well said. Well said, Romy. You just never knew. And for this industry to spread, and as we all know, Mexican cuisine has really grown. And for it to grow into the north and the east, we couldn't burn people up. Because the first time somebody got a hot chili, they were done, you know. and I got some hot ones in here. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, you can just smoke somebody, and that's tough. They don't want it after that. So what really brought us to the forefront in breeding was we were the first ones to come with a stabilized heat level genetically so that this industry could spread, and it did. And our first variety was Arizona 20, and Arizona 20 was very stable in heat, almost too mild, almost grassy. Heat in itself, there's many.
Is the number a reference to a heat index?
Scoville unit. Okay. Units. But then inside the Scoville unit is there's the anhydros and dihydros, and we all know that you eat one, you know, like a jalapeno hits you one place in your mouth. Other chilies hit you in the back of the throat. Some chili, you eat it, and 5 minutes later, you go, you know, I think that thing's getting hot. And a little bit, just going, you know, it's getting really hot. You know,
Do you bring your ice cream in that bag?
Yeah, exactly. You know, chili's an interesting fruit because it's the only thing we eat that gets us coming and going. You know what I mean? Just a bit of humor.
Well, hey, and the Romero family is going to love to try your chili peppers, Ed, because they love to cook, and you guys get pretty spicy, right?
Yeah, we look like a good heat, and there's a lot of good recipes right there on your fillyourplate.org with if you need some ideas for that.
Yes, to just use those chilies, chili peppers. The only thing that's lacking right now, but Ed promises me we'll get those on there, is some recipes from his sister and his wife that can really add and enhance that whole list of recipes that feature our Arizona chili peppers.
And we're talking about the different types of chili peppers, and we were talking genetics. One of my stat sheets, there are how many different sets of genes in a chili pepper?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. First off, I'm going to ask you, how many genes do you think, Romy, a human has?
You know, I've only got four. I've got this set I'm wearing that are kind.
I got my Sunday
pair.
I got my stable pair.
Julie, I think we're going to have to guide these boys back to subject. They're over on Levi's and Wranglers, you know.
Exactly.
A human has roughly 22,000 pairs of jeans. I mean, there's
I have more
debate
in my closet.
Yeah, she has more in her closet. But, you know, technically the real science says 19,900 and something. I forget exactly. But give or take 20 to 22,000 genes, and we learn more all the time. Pepper, my original study showed 42,000, and that's what I taught kids in classes for years. But recently UC Davis did a new study and comes up with that there's a little over 30,000. But nevertheless, whether it's 30 or 40,000, it's still much more diverse than even we as humans. And our job as breeders is to to separate those gene packages out. And I love to talk about gene packages because it's really fun. If I say to you, Romy, brown eyes, you say what hair?
Brown.
Or if I say to you, blue eyes, you say what hair?
Blonde.
Blonde. If I say red hair, you say what? Fair skin, right? Typically.
And freckles.
Okay. And freckles. And freckles. Yeah. So my job is to make a freckle brunette, you know. My job is to take these gene packages and because they run in packages. And we're trying to take the best of certain things and put it with the best of other things and leave the genes that we don't like behind. It's fun, guys. I'm telling you, I got to live to be 150 years old to get some of this stuff figured out. It is fun. And you know, to me, if you don't see God's handiwork in what I do, boy, you're pretty blind, because this thing, there is diverse genes in this thing. It's amazing.
And you're a fourth generation farmer.
Yes, sir.
No disrespect, but I'm going to just go out on a limb and say you're probably not going to make it to 150. Do you have a fifth generation coming up behind you learning from you?
We're eating chili. This one chili has more vitamin C than two oranges, and we might make it. You know, I've ate a lot of chili.
I love your optimism.
Now, you've just sliced a pepper open. What are you showing us?
Well,
there?
You know what I was going to show you? Good question. What I was going to show you is, and this one's not, I thought I know I've got one in there that's hot, but this one's not very. But the capsaicin runs down the placenta wall.
Okay.
And so anytime you want to fool your friends and make them think you can eat hot chili, you take the slice that doesn't include the placenta wall and then give them the placenta wall, and they're going to get the capsaicin and you're not.
And the placenta wall is that ribbed, that inside rib?
Right, that's where the seed are developed. You know, an interesting thing, most people will tell you, oh, the seed is hot. In and of itself, seed's not hot. It's only because the reason the seed is often perceived as hot is because the capsaicin is developed on the placenta wall where the seed is attached, and it spreads to it. Now, we have a mutation that we're having a lot of fun with right now, and that is it starts a vestigial vein, a vein that never, that's a medical term. It basically means it doesn't quite mature in the sexual organs. It's actually a medical term. But the same in plants, in the placenta wall, when it doesn't quite mature, then it sends these false placentas down, but it's also sending capsaicin. We have had a lot of fun with this, because to have a chili with the heat and the meat is very different.
Only at Rosie on the House are you going to learn birds and bees and hot peppers.
And
that's right. And that's right. You get it all right here.
And Ed Curry is my best example of a farmer with a lot of enthusiasm, and in this case about chili peppers.